Mr. Rock, reel 4. We're talking about leave periods. Tell us about them while you were out there.
I'm saying, in Singapore once, I'd put my name down for a leave period. And they said I could go with the, it was the Gordon Highlanders, on patrol with them. And it was the worst thing ever volunteered for in my life. It was the scouts were, the scout we had was a Dayak. Jet black, the hair jet black, tattooed all over his body. And he spoke perfect English. And I used to chat with him a lot. But he was educated at Cambridge in England. His father was the chief of something. And we did the patrol.
What do you remember about the patrol? This is his leave.
This is leave, yeah.
Now tell me about the patrol. What do you remember of that patrol? Well, that's with the 1st Battalion Gordon Highlanders in Malaya.
Yeah. Well, you patrol up and down there between plantations, and you'd stop at night in a clear pitch. I think people of villages would let you know of any goings on, you know, guerrillas, because the people that you were actually fighting, a lot of people don't realise, the people that you fought in Malaya were the people that we armed to fight against the Japanese. You know, and all the arms caches were all over the Malaya where they'd been put down for emergency purposes against the Japanese. I mean, see, we're on patrol and go from one place to another place. And when we come back to the camp in Kuala Lumpur, the Dayak sent for me. They had their own quarters, the Dayaks. And he said, "Here's a present for you." And he gave me this little box. And I looked and said, "Oh," I said, "don't that." The shrunken head. He said, "I quite understand," he says. He said, "but this is the greatest gift I could give you." He said, "that's my father." He says, "the greatest gift I could give you." I said, "thank you very, very much. But no," I said, "there's no way." I said, "even if I wanted it," I said, "they would allow me to take it ashore in the UK." And I think he laughed it off. He said, "but other people wouldn't laugh it off." He says, "I'm educated over in the UK." He says, "some of these guys here," he says, "would actually cut your head off for actual insult to them to refuse it." Another time in Malaya, they wanted
nothing
bullet.
Happened on that patrol. Though. I mean, things happened, but what I mean is there was no
fight. There was no fighting at all. But
sorry, you were just going to tell another story.
Well, in the Second World War, as far as the British were concerned, Singapore was impregnable. You couldn't get there, you know. But the Japanese had proved them wrong by coming through. And they came through so fast, they just couldn't understand how it was done. So they wanted volunteers. They said, when everything was settling down after the career was nearly finished, and the wars in Malaya were settling down as well, they wanted volunteers to go on a patrol the full length of the thing and see how fast you could do it. Malaya. And I think there were about 38 of us. And we did it. But we didn't do it in any near as the time that the Japanese had done it, carrying ammunition and rifles and stuff with them as they went along the way. We were nowhere near as fast as them.
Was it tough?
It was tough, yeah. Yeah, the there's some trails you can go through, and you, as a European, and he goes there, you wouldn't know one trail from another. But Dayaks, they go, they can actually see, you know, 200, 300 yards in the jungle. You can see about 5 yards, and that's your maximum thing. But they could see right the way through. And I was just saying, well, how can you? And he'd get and say, look here, look there. And sure enough, there'd be a bloody deer. And you couldn't, until he showed you, and you know, you say, no, and he go, keep watching. You see, how on earth they saw these things is unbelievable. But they're damn fantastic eyesight. And the hearing, as well, that was another thing that astonished me. On that patrol when I was with the Gordon Islanders, we were walking through the jungle and through this plantation, and the chap behind me said, Sparks they call you because you were carrying a walkie-talkie. He said, freeze. He said, don't turn round. He said, freeze. He said, there's a huge snake at the tree. And I could see this thing around the tree. And the shout of the dying, he come back. And he roared and roared and laughter. He couldn't get over it. And what it was a rubber tree where they'd been cutting the thing, the fungi it grew. But it, you know, for a genuine mistake, it looked like a huge snake around a tree.
Now, how did your time come out to an end? Did you leave the ship, or did the ship come back with you?
The ship finished for the last time. It had the longest paying off penance of any ship in the Royal Navy. I think it was 35 years.
So it was decommissioned out there, or did she sail back?
No, she stayed there.
Where was she decommissioned?
In Hong Kong. As far as I know.
Was there any ceremony?
Well, you did have a little bit of a ceremony.
But nothing big, just the paying off pendant.
You had a pendant that radiated from the mast. It flew halfway down Hong Kong Harbour. You had it on balloons to keep it upright.
So then what happened to you?
We were supposed to fly home. And we only had...
This is in 19... When would this be? 1950?
The end of 53.
I thought you'd had your 21st birthday out there.
I did have, yeah.
That would be 1955?
No.
Born in 1934?
I was born in 34, yeah.
21's 55 then.
34, 45, 46, 47, 48, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53, 54. I had my 21st birthday out there, I know that.
Whatever, you know. No. So what happened then?
Well, see, we were supposed to fly out. All our kit had gone on one of the troop ships. And we were all ready to fly from Singapore. And at the last minute, instructions changed. And we were coming on HMS Glory, which was trooping. And we only had civvies. We had no Navy gear. And it was the thin tropical stuff, what was the thing? The Navy paid and bought it for us to come home, fly home. And I got home here on the 12th of December. I remember that date.
So you flew back then?
No,
you
went
back in the,
came back on the trooper.
And what date was the date you got back?
I got back here on the 12th of December. I was actually in the train coming from King's Cross up, and there was only me and a old lady, and I was shivering, and I couldn't stop shivering. And she says, "Are you cold, son?" I said, "As a matter of fact, I was." I said, "It's very, very, just thin stuff like this, tropical, okay?" And she got a shawl out of her luggage to give me to put over me. And I got home. When I got home, I didn't even know where I lived. My mother had moved from when I'd gone in the Royal Navy. And so I had to ask where I got home. I got into my mum's. And when I'd gone away, my brother that's next to me was only a small, little runt of a lad. And I said, "Where's Barry?" "Oh, he'll be coming up in a minute, up the bank, just on the bottom of the bank." And then she says, "He's Barry coming up the bank." And I look at her and say, "He's not coming." She says, "Yeah, he is coming up in the bank now." And this great big 6'2", great big hefty lad. I said, "That's not Barry." He said, "That's Barry." He'd grew that much. He'd gone from school into the rolling mills. And that's what had put the beef on him. But I would have walked by him and never ever knew he was my brother. I would never know. And another thing I got into trouble for out the Far East was that he used to write to him, he used to say, I'll wait till next week. I'll wait till next week. And it goes on for years. And I got a sent home by the skipper. He'd got a letter from the Admiralty saying I hadn't wrote home for nearly 3 years. And the petty officer of the watch sat in the wild of. And he sat down there where I wrote a letter and addressed it to my mum. And he took it off me and posted it. He said, "Oh, yes, well, I was going to write next week. You know, I'm going to write next week." And that's how it went. You were daft and young. You didn't think of a letter. You're not getting a letter of someone.
So what other postings did you have? We'll just go through them more quickly, but what other postings did you have?
Well, once I got home, the first posting I had was the Admiralty in London.
What was that at?
Marble Arch, the Admiralty Arch. There.
In the sort of Admiralty as a...
In the Admiralty itself. Yeah. Well, it was mainly teleprinter work then.
Oh, the teleprinter operator.
But while I was there, that's where I met the wife. And it was a strange happenings. The skipper of the Cardigan Bay, when we all come, when the last duties thing, there was a message come through saying that he'd been awarded the DSO. He was a senior four-rank Navy officer without a DSO. And he literally cried. You know, you see, he was a great big fella, 6'6". And he literally cried. And he says, anyone coming into London, he said, when you get home, go to the Savoy Hotel. He said, and have a notion what you want on me. Tell him who you are. So, you had no naval barracks in London. You just used civil things. Well, there was about five of us lived in the Union Jack Club. And one of the lads there was a proper lady lad. He said, I've got a date today. He said, for everyone, he says, at the WAFS hostel in St. John's Wood. So we all went up there. I was as shy as hell. And I seen this lass opposite. And I said, this lad, Chuck Arkle, I said, get over there. Chat it out, will you? Tell her, come over. And she came over. And that's how we met, the wife, Nolly. But she was a cook and bat lady to Sir William Dixon, who was the Marshal of the Royal Air Force. At the time, he was a Marshal of the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. And she lived at next door to Winston Churchill in Kensington Gardens. And she said, come up and sit. I might get off early. I said, okay. She told me where to go. And I went down this little side street and I couldn't find this back door. See the front door. So I went round the front door and I buggered it. I went on the door. This little old baldy fella answered the door. I said, I'm sorry. I said, I'm supposed to be looking for the back door. I said, I'm looking for Isabel Hood. That's okay, he says, come in. And he went into this hallway and there was a wall there, it must have been 30 metres long, and there was one picture of the Battle of the Nile, Nelson. And fantastic. And he's going through the house and he's shouting, Isabel, Isabel. He's just like, sounding like a little queer. Isabel, Isabel. So when I found him, here you are. I said, thank you very much. I said, was that? He said, the Master of the Royal Air Force. Sir William Dixon. And one time I'd been up there and I had to go back and get on and watch. You're in civvies all the time, you change when you're there, you had your locker. Changing the naval uniform. And there's no way I was going to get back in time. And it was, in London, it was a serious offence to be late. And so, she said, I'll see the Marshal. He had a regimental sergeant, Harriet, driver. He said, I'll see the Marshal for you. So, she said, Marshal. And I got a lift. Well, when that car went in the Admiralty, it did go around the back like normal cars do. It went through Horse Guard Parade and got stopped at the bottom of the steps at the back of the Admiralty. And I'm getting out, and this voice says, Rock! And who should it be was Sir Brian Cecil Durrance. You've come up in places, he says. He said, that's the Marshal's car. I said, yes, sir. You could joke with him. Most naval officers you couldn't joke with. But you could joke with him. I said, it's just one of family friends. He said, what? And he said to me, he said, did you ever go to the Swiss? I said, no. He said, look, he said, his postman, he come home, was a CNC, Coastal Command, British Coastal Command, at Norwood. And he said, look, he gives a telephone number. Find out now, he's only on watch, and how many wants to go to a party. He said, I'll arrange it all. So when I'm on watch, there used to be about 200 on a watch. Friends and Navy, you know, Matlows. And then, that's the because I was a bugger of clowning about. When I said, well, who wants to go to a party? Oh, go to hell. Well, we're going to Savoy. Oh, go on. Well, a few of them decided that we wanted to go, about 30 of us. And we went. We had a most marvellous time. Everything you wanted was there, everything. Of course, when we got back and watched the next night, and I was saying, oh, what a party you missed. It was Was it right? Said, yeah, it was right. I said, well, no, you know what he's like, but he was right. He's fabulous. But he rung me while I was out on watch one night. So Brad, sister to ask me about, was I satisfied with the party? I said, yes, very satisfied.
Now, what were your actual duties on the teleprinter? What were you actually doing? What was your sort of day like?
Well, yeah, you did 12-hour watches. And the teleprinter bays were all different locations around the world. Halifax, Nova Scotia, Washington, Vancouver, Singapore, Gibraltar, Malta,
doesn't matter. Carry on.
Well, the thing was, you could be out of touch with a certain station for a long time, depending on.
Were you always on the same teleprinters?
No, you change round. And if you were on one that was, you couldn't get through, you'd ask one of the others to try, and they could go through, say, whoever you wanted to get to Trincomalee, in India, maybe go through Malta and someone else, and get through that way. And you could get through that way. Fair enough, you could send your messages that way.
So how long were you at Admiralty House? We're not sure whether it was 1953 or 1955, but how long were you there?
I think it was 18 months. 18 months to a year. And then I went on to the... I went on to the Ark Royal then. The only big ship I had.
Was that your last commission then?
No. I went on the Ark Royal. And...
Just a general
communicator. But while I was actually on it, in 1956, when the Suez Canal, we were laid off at Limassol, waiting to go in for that. It was a bad year that year for influenza, and a lot of the air crews got caught up in it. Well, my branch used to fly in Gannets, which was a pilot, a navigator, and a wireless op. The wireless op first aft, and he had a screen, a sonar screen. And he was going to course. The navigator would say, right, drop one. And you drop a boy through, only small boys, no, go sailing. He used to tell you when you drop them, and then he'd say, okay, turn on course, and you'd read the screen to see what's thing, if anything come up between them boys. Somewhere out there, that's what it's for. Nothing come up with them. But I say they were short of things, a lot of things. They wanted volunteers to go air crew, so I volunteered and went with the Gannets. Well, the crews of that, the Gannets had been taken off the ship into Limassol in Cyprus, and they we had to leave them there. So I had this flying job until they were reunited, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
You enjoyed that?
Oh, immensely. And the best part about it was that the station that they were stationed at was HMS Fulmar, which was Lossiemouth in the north of Scotland. Well, that's where my wife's from. of course, when we flew into Lossiemouth Lake, there's always leave for locals. And I said, oh, look, you're not local. I said, I am local. I said, I live just down the road there. It's a big, long road. Beautiful roads around that area. Straight as a die. And the mother-in-law and father had a farm.
You were married then?
Well, I was courting still. I was courting at that time. And I used to be able to get up thing because she was in the services at the time. When she came out of the services, I was still with the squadron.
So which squadron is it?
I can never remember the number of it. 284, I think it was. Gannett Squadron.
So what happened next then? What was your next posting?
And when I left the...
when did you leave the Ark Royal?
It was just after we went from Cyprus across to the stateside, North Virginia, to do cross-flying operations with the American things. And the when we came back from there, I left the...
So it'd be 1957?
I think it was the end of 56, I think. No, it'd be 57, Yeah, 57. And then I got a draft to a ship called HMS Barrage. Nobody knew where this ship was. HMS Barrage. What was and all that? They didn't know anything about it. And so I'd gone down to the draft office and they tell you, you know, I said, where is it? I don't know. Oh, he says, South Wales. I said, well, South Wales, whereabouts? Like, I need a ticket to get there. He says, Milford Haven. So, got down my tree, got down Milford Haven. It was only a little harbour. Yeah, there was no ship here. There was this dirty old bloody ship in the corner. And I said, excuse me, there wasn't the ship there. Oh, that'd be HMS Barrage, that one. And it was a coal burner. And what they were doing, they had about 7 divers on board. And Milford Haven's a big area for sea shipping thing they wanted to do, the oil refinery there. But they'd deliberately been blocked at the mouth by sinking ships there. And we had to get them all up. And that's what we were there, is to be during the week you worked every hour going, but most of the divers were actually civilian divers.
So you were on the wireless, I presume?
Oh yeah.